Welcome to The Warcast, your geopolitical briefing that tells you what you need to know, when you need to know it. The Warcast is for War on the Rocks members only. Spread the word and tell your friends and colleagues to sign up at warontherocks.com/subscribe.
As Saudi-supported forces are poised to take Hodeidah, a major port that is used to get humanitarian aid into Yemen, the human cost of the Yemeni civil war will undoubtedly spike from an already terrible level. My guest today is Charles Schmitz, professor of geography at Towson University. Welcome to the Warcast, Charles.
Thank you.
Now, while most of our listeners are familiar with the general political contours of the war, could you give us a sense of where each major side is physically within Yemen and the levels of support that they receive from major state sponsors?
Okay. Yemen's population is concentrated in the Western Highlands. And most of the Western Highlands, the high country, are controlled by the Houthi forces. And the anti-Houthi forces that are being supported by Saudi Arabia and the Emirates and the United States are in the south, the east, and now headed up the west coast towards Al Hudaydah, as you mentioned. The Houthi are really a homegrown force, but they do receive support of some sort from Iran. They have, since the war began, they've received missiles, advanced missiles from the Iranians that they've used against Saudi Arabia. But the Houthi forces are surrounded and are subject to an air and sea blockade by the Saudi Emirati forces. So any support getting to the Houthi has to be smuggled in. The conflict has been largely a stalemate. The Houthi, after their effective coup in January of 2015, they began moving towards the rest of the country, but the Saudi intervention in March of 2015 halted the southern resistance forces, which were kind of forces that sprang up in former units of the Yemeni military that supported the Hadi government. The Hadi is in Riyadh. They were able to retake Aden, the southern capital, and the southern provinces, but then stalemated where the former border was and around the Taiz region up until very recently, when the Saudi Emirati-backed forces seemed to have begun to move forward a bit.
Yeah, much has been written about the human costs of this war. I mean, almost the point where, at least personally, you see reports and it's hard to even read them. Can you just give us a sense of what the cost of this war has been in terms of human suffering, both directly and consequently from the fighting?
To put it in context, the Yemeni economy over the last 2.5 decades has been oil dependent, highly oil dependent. And Yemen's oil before the war was diminishing. The war stopped oil production, and so that means that most of the government's revenue halted, and that revenue that had been passing through the government in forms of investment and particular salaries to government employees stopped entirely. And the stopping of the oil exports is probably the largest, the biggest impact on people, because the economy has shrunk tremendously. What has happened is people are more and more dependent upon relatives or friends or outsiders sending money in. The latest reports say that about a quarter of GDP now is made up by remittances as the economy shrinks and people send money in. Then the Saudi air campaign hit not only military targets, but lots of infrastructure. So, for example, Yemen imports 90% of its wheat and 100% of its rice. Most of its food is imported. The Saudis hit in Aden the only mills, grain mills. So now only flour is imported rather than grain because there's no place to mill it. They hit lots of transportation infrastructure and whatnot. So there's been a tremendous destruction of infrastructure that will take a long time to build once this conflict is to rebuild once this conflict is over. And then about 3 million people they estimate have been displaced by the fighting, and that's the big concern right now with Hodeida, because there's about 350,000 people in Hodeida, and if a battle for the city begins and they all flee, and they already have begun to flee, they end up in refugee camps, which make when they become very vulnerable. So supplies are scarce. There was an outbreak of cholera. Medical supplies are scarce. And, basic things like the anti-diarrhea for kids and those sorts of things are in short supply. And so there is a tremendous amount of suffering going on right now in Yemen.
Let's talk about the Hodeida itself, and I hear that there's a very large population that would be in extreme danger if this attack goes forward. What is the strategic utility of Hodeida to the Saudi-backed forces?
Well, it's the last remaining port that the Houthis control. So the Saudi Emirati forces control the south, where there are a number of ports, and then they began moving up from the south along the Red Sea coast, and they took a number of smaller ports. The main port, the two main ports in Yemen are Aden, which they retook in the battle for Aden in the summer of 2015, and then Hodeida. And Hodeida supplies directly Sana'a, which is the capital, the Houthi-controlled capital, and the largest population centers up in the highlands. And the Houthi control it. The Saudis and the Emiratis and the Hadi government, they would like to take the port because they want to be able to control what's going in and out. Clearly, the Houthi have gotten some advanced weaponry somehow. And though everything going through Hodeida goes through an inspection controlled by the Saudi, Emirati, American forces, the Hadi government, they want to control the Hodeida port to make sure or to help make sure that weapons, more weapons don't get into the Houthi. They also want to control it because the Houthi have managed to control the economy by controlling that port. So the Houthi have, the way that the Houthi are raising revenue is controlling, for example, the fuel markets and the food markets and whatnot. It's the wholesale distribution that they've gotten hold of, and they are using it to raise revenue to keep their organization and keep the war going. And so the Hadi government wants to control Hodeida. There are about 350,000 residents in Hodeida, and they would be directly involved. Although the way these conflicts, there's been a conflict in the middle of Taiz for a long time. In fact, for the duration of the war, Taiz has been a divided city. If it's clear that the Hadi government's going to, the Emirati-backed Hadi government is going to take Hodeida, there probably will be sort of negotiations with local tribal and neighborhood leaders that will help facilitate the mitigation of civilian casualties to some extent.
Could you tell us a little bit about what the U.S.'s role in the war has been?
The United States has been very ambiguous about this war. So this war, my understanding is that the Pentagon was not happy about it. The Saudis went into it without a clear plan, a clear exit, a clear strategy. And there were lots of doubts about the ability of the Saudi air campaign to bring the Houthi forces, to get them to surrender. My understanding is that the United States allowed the Saudis to do this because this was a pet project of bin Salman, and the Saudis had reluctantly given in to the nuclear deal with Iran, which they weren't happy about at all. And so, the Americans went along with it. Although Obama approved the largest by value arms deal with the Saudis to assure them that the United States is with the Saudis and concerned about Saudi security, and for a period there was a small team under Obama that was helping with the targeting to try and get the Saudis to stop bombing civilians. There was a couple of high-profile attacks that killed large numbers of civilians. The Obama administration pulled that small team after the bombing, the funeral in Sana'a. Under Trump, there's been a bit more engagement. So U.S. Special Forces are fighting the Houthi along the Saudi border, which is also clearly a move to tell the Saudis, to signal to the Saudis that the United States is concerned about and will act on Saudi security. But the U.S. has, under both the Obama and the Trump administration, insisted correctly that there is no military solution to this, and that there's going to be a political solution that will include the Houthis that will end this war.
Well, let's end with a possible solution. So in your mind, what would an acceptable outcome look like in Yemen? And is there a viable path to get to such a peace?
Well, right now, the new UN negotiator, Martin Griffiths, he's going to report next week to the UN. And that's why the United States is pressuring the Emirati forces not to go into Hodeidah. They want the Emirati forces to wait to give Griffiths a chance. And clearly a solution is the Houthi giving up their missiles, the Houthi agreeing to disarm to some extent, putting together a national reconciliation government that will clearly involve the Houthi and the Hadi government and others that should be at that table as well. The biggest sticking point is, who's going to control the military situation while everybody de-escalates? In other words, who will the Houthi turn the weapons over to? The Houthi don't want to turn them over to Hadi. So the idea is to get kind of a neutral third party that both sides would trust to sort of oversee the military de-escalation. It seems difficult. It began to happen in one of the early negotiation rounds, and then it broke down. But I sense that there's a better chance this time. So I'm a bit hopeful that actually we're going to see a slow negotiation and perhaps a de-escalation.
Great. Thank you, Charles.